This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
You're on Joy 94.9 listening to Adam Barillet's All Natural. Joining me on the line right now is Brooke Squires, one of the keepers at the Werribee Zoo. Today we're going to be talking about the rhinoceros. Brooke, thank you very much for your time today.
Pleasure.
So tell me a little bit about the rhinoceros.
Oh, the rhinoceros. Gosh, they're such an incredible creature, it's hard to know where to start. We've got southern white rhinos here at Werribee Zoo. We've currently got 7 of them. And they're enormous, they're from Africa, they're just incredible. But one, because I think they weigh 2.5 tonnes each, so we're talking about really big creatures. But for me as a keeper, what's incredible about them is they're just so affectionate and very personable animals. They're just incredible to come and see.
When you say they're very personable, I know I've had cats before and I swear that all my cats have different personalities. Do you notice different personalities in your rhinoceros?
Oh, absolutely. And these are southern white rhinos, so I don't know if anybody out there knows what a southern white rhino looks like, but they're the largest of the rhino species. And they're different from other rhinos and they have this big wide lip. That's how they got their name, because white sounds very much like wide in Afrikaans, so it's kind of a bit of a mistake, I guess, when we name them. But these beautiful big mouths, when I say they're affectionate towards you, they want to come up and kiss you and touch you, and they just want to know everything about you. And I find that incredible, that this amazingly big animal wants to be able to do that to people, because so many animals don't really like us, really, especially
yeah.
Wild animals. But rhinos, I don't know what it is, they just seem to really, really dig us. And as a keeper, that's incredibly satisfying. And also makes it much easier for us to work with them, as you can imagine. So
I bet, for sure. Now, they've got poor sight, I believe, but they've got really good hearing and a great sense of smell.
That's spot on. In fact, the eyesight is so crap, I don't know why they've still got eyeballs. They can see probably maybe about 40 metres in front of their face, and that's about it. But their sense of hearing is incredibly acute. And if you ever watch a rhino, their ears are moving like enormous sonar radars all the time, even when they're sleeping. And their sense of smell, well, they say their nasal passages are bigger than their brains, so I don't know if that's a really good indictment for rhinos or not. But they have these enormous nostrils, and they're right down near that big mouth. And so everything they do, they're smelling it as well as, you know, knowing about it, because their noses are right there in amongst it all the time. And that's kind of important. Sense of smell is really important for rhinoceros. It's how they kind of know what's going on in the world, I guess, is through their sense of smell more than anything else about them. So, yeah, it's actually really, really important to have these massive, enormous nostrils.
I guess it'll get quite, intimidating or scary for them on days when it's really windy as well.
Yeah, it does. That's a really good point. Like a lot of animals, you know, when it's windy, they can't kind of work out where sounds and things are coming from. But if you shut your eyes as a person and go out on a windy day with all these crazy sounds, it's disconcerting for us. Imagine what it's like to be a really big rhinoceros. Same thing. You can't see anything, but you can hear all the stuff going on. You can smell the stuff going on. So, yeah, it does. It gets really disconcerting. So you'll find if you come to the zoo in winter, our rhinos are quite often a lot more jumpy and hyperactive and bouncy than they are during summer. So you really notice it when you come here too.
For such a heavy animal, you don't normally hear of them described as bouncy.
These guys turn on a penny. It's one of the questions a lot of people ask us, because they are so affectionate, is why don't we get in with our rhinos? And it's not that they were deliberately set out to hurt you. They're not aggressive at all. But if they get a fright, God, these guys move so fast. They would squish you and they wouldn't even know they'd done it. And they can run up to 60 k's an hour too. So when I say bouncing around and that these guys can move, you have 2.5 tonnes that can move at 60 k's an hour. I tell you, they're pretty light on their feet.
Wow. Now, I have a stupid question that I must ask. I know that the closest living relative of the rhinoceros is the Asian tapir. However, they're also closely related to horses or the equine family. Would it be possible to ride a rhinoceros?
Do you know, if I could figure out how to put a saddle on them, I reckon we'd give it a shot. I know, it's the weirdest thing. When you say to people that the closest relative to a rhino is a horse, people kind of look at you and think you're a bit mad. But way, way back in the evolutionary tree, they actually looked a lot more like horses than what they look like today. So you can see how it's kind of come about. But I suppose what's really important with that is that a lot of research that's done in the horse world on horse reproduction and horse management is actually really, really applicable to rhinoceros. And that makes life actually a lot easier for us when we're trying to figure out new ways to do things with them, especially when it comes to veterinary work and things like that. So, but it is, it's hard to believe. But yeah, I'd like to ride one. That'd be cool.
Yeah, exactly. I believe they also like to wallow in the mud.
Oh, yeah. Rhinos, give them an Olympic-sized swimming pool full of mud and they'd be the happiest things on earth.
Why do they do that?
Mostly because it protects their skin. They live in a pretty hot environment and with lots of ticks and parasites and things like that. So by wallowing, it actually helps to cool them down quite a bit and just protects them from lots of biting insects and things like that.
Whereabouts do we find the southern white rhinoceros around the world?
Mostly in southern Africa. And their numbers have been very, very low in the past because they're being hunted for their horn, of course. But in southern Africa now, they have very, very good anti-poaching measures, so to stop people from hunting them, especially in the national parks. So their numbers are actually increasing quite well.
I believe what the poachers are doing, though, they're still trying to get their horns off them, but they're actually sedating them rather than killing them. Is that right?
Well, I'd like to think that was the case, but if I put you in the picture with rhino horn, it's made out of hair, which seems really weird because when you look at it, it looks like it's the toughest thing on earth, but it's actually made out of keratin, so the same stuff as your fingernails and your hair, and really condensed mass. But that horn is worth probably about 2.5 times the price of gold.
Wow.
So it's probably about $2,500 US per ounce is what it's worth. So it's actually the most valuable animal product or animal commodity on the black market today, rhino and tiger parts. So really, if you're going in to get a rhinoceros in the wild, you're not going to mess around with sedating them. You're going to go in and you're going to shoot them. And even if they're not dead, you're going to take that horn off their face because that is it's such a big operation. It's worth so much money. And the anti-poaching measures and the punishment for being caught poaching are really, really severe. So there's no messing around. You just go in and do it. But one of the things that we're trying to do, or we have thought about doing again, they did it in Zimbabwe, was a dehorning program. So they knocked a lot of the rhinos out in the national parks and actually took the horns off them, dehorned them, because it doesn't hurt them. It's just like cutting your hair, same sort of thing. And the horn does grow back eventually, just to try and deter poachers from actually going and killing these animals. And it kind of worked, but because that horn is just worth so much money, people will go and kill a rhino even for 2 centimetres of horn. So, you know, it's a really tricky one to deal with, especially when you're looking at the fact that rhinos live mostly in third world countries.
Yes,
and if,
sure.
If you are desperately poor and you think that killing a rhino is going to feed your family for the next 20 years, that's a really hard thing to combat against. But I guess the difference now is that we use AK-47s instead of, you know, bows and arrows and spears, so it becomes a bit unfair for the rhinoceros, I guess.
Mm. Now, I also believe that rhinoceros horn is valued as an aphrodisiac and for treatment for fever and other things like snake bites. Is there actually scientific evidence to support that, or is that just
a bit of palaver?
Yeah.
A bit of rubbish. It's a really good question. It's also used as a painkiller. What they've found in the past, historically, especially in you know, some of the kingdoms of old Asia, if you like, is that they used to use rhino horn for a whole heap of things. So, for instance, they used to make the goblet of the ruling king out of rhino horn because it does actually detect poison. It does actually change colour if you put a poison in it. Just the nature of rhino horn, that's what it does. So I think based on a lot of very old myths and things that people used to do, it still comes through our culture that it has this ability. But to be honest, you know what? You're going to get a much better pain relief from taking a couple of aspirin or a couple of Panadol than you are from chewing on some rhino horn. So it's about, yeah, maybe some of these properties exist. Maybe some of them are myths. They've not all been proven, but there are much more effective things out there today that don't require us killing a rhinoceros.
So are you breeding them at Werribee Zoo?
Yes, they are happily having sex every month, which is good, which is an amazing thing to see, is 2 rhinoceros getting it on.
I bet.
And yeah, we're doing okay, but we've introduced a new bull into our group. His name's Kapamba. He's from Holland originally, and he's never really been with the girls before. And so for him, it's all a little bit of excitement at the moment. So I think he's still too excited to actually really, really get it right. But he'll mature a little bit and slow down, hopefully, and figure out which end of the rhino is the correct end at some stage. But rhinos are really tricky. You think it's like birds and bees and that you can put them together and they're going to have sex and they'll have babies and it's all fine, but they're actually not that simple. They're very complex animals and their social system is very, very complicated. So if you don't get that quite right, then a rhino will literally snob the other vagina and say, you know what, you may look good, but I'm not interested. So you've kind of got to get the mix just right. So I guess we're lucky we've got four girls here and three boys, so we can kind of mix the combination up until we find the right rhino combination, and hopefully they like each other. But yeah, we've definitely had calves born here before, and we've got some nice pairs together at the moment, so hopefully something will come of that.
So in the wild, what are the family groupings like? Is it a group of females and one male, or...?
It's pretty funky, actually. The boys have to work pretty hard for the girls. Usually a male has a territory, and he's very fierce about that territory. It's his block of land, his little castle, if you like, and no other boy rhinos are allowed into that area. But any girl that comes into that area, just wanders in or cruises through, he will absolutely bust himself to impress her. So he struts around and shows how tough he is, and shows him her poo piles, and shows her the wallow and all that sort of thing. And if he is able to keep her in the territory, then she'll actually mate with him, because he's obviously proven himself to be tough enough to be able to do that. But rhinos have to learn how to do that, and that can be quite complicated. And the girls can be nasty, hey? When they come into a territory, they really make these boys, fight for their attention. So it's quite a tough thing for a bunch of rhinos to do. And usually the girls hang out in gangs too, in groups, so I think that can be quite intimidating for a male rhinoceros in his territory, when a whole sort of gang of these females come in and they just give him hell for as long as they can until he's proven himself. So it's quite interesting.
I'm starting to think, my lucky stars, that I'm not a rhinoceros. It sounds like hard work.
Oh, yeah. It's hardcore, can I tell you? They work hard, but, they're 2.5 tonnes, 3 tonnes, and they seem to know what they're doing, and, But the thing is, then you have to wait 16 months to see if you're going to have a baby or not. So that's the hard part, it's the waiting part. But it's interesting to watch how they get their social systems just right.
Now, another random question just popped into my head. A lot of the animals at the zoo, they have either Asian or African names, I notice, in Australia. Are there animals around the world that have possibly come from Australia that are called, like, Jack and Bob and Susie?
I have no doubt. And are you talking about specifically in zoos?
Oh, possibly. I don't know. We just, all our zoos seem to have all these exotic names that I've only heard of in zoos.
Well, I'll let you in on a secret, especially in zoos. Our rule of thumb down here at Werribee is whoever finds the animal gets to name the animal. And it all depends on how, I guess, eccentric or crazy the keeper is. So we've had a bunch of zebras named Spot, Dot and Tot before. And we've got a giraffe named Anthony, or Tony for short.
Yep.
So it can get kind of kooky. And what we're doing with our addax at the moment, so we've got another endangered species here, an antelope called the addax, and they're currently having babies, is we've decided we're going to name them after our favourite chocolates.
Fair enough.
That's how our system works. Very professional.
Yes, very professional. I like it. I can't wait for them to be exported into other countries and have to explain.
Have to justify that name. We'll say it with an accent. It sounds African. It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. What, cherry ripe with an accent.
Yeah.
Now tell me a little bit about Malarco.
Now, Malarco is an interesting one. I'm sure people are thinking, God, what the hell's Malarco? But Malarco is our conservation commitment in Kenya, in northern Kenya. And I think when Werribee Zoo were looking around for something they were really passionate about and wanted to support, in the past it's been so easy for zoos to just go, right, rhinoceros, we're passionate about that, we're going to support rhinoceros in the wild. And once upon a time, that kind of used to work, but now that doesn't cut it anymore. And we know if you're going to save a species, you've got to be, I guess, look at a much bigger picture than that. You've got to help the community, work with the community, work with a lot of different species, work with the whole ecosystem, if that makes sense, not just a single animal. So we know to save the rhino in northern Kenya, we really have to work with communities. And so Malarco Community Conservancy is the group that we're actually working with. And I guess the role and effect from that is it's not just about helping the rhinoceros. They have some of the most remarkable animals up there that are quite endangered. So animals like the grevy zebra, which is one species of zebra, and they have the largest population of grevies actually live in and around our conservation area. And they're neat animals. They have these huge ears like donkeys and these beautiful fine little stripes that look really, really different to sort of your common zebra. But they also have the wild dogs, African wild dogs. They have cheetah up there. They have a whole range of species. So by going in and just protecting one animal, if you do it the right way and you work with the community, you actually end up helping the whole system, the ecosystem, the animals and the people, providing livelihoods, providing jobs, all that sort of thing. And I guess it's really important for us to recognise that Malarco is our partner. We're not a donor. We're not a... we're not just giving them money. That's not how it works. It's a true partnership. So we go over and lend expertise. They tell us, or help us to understand how better to help them. It's a real two-way network. And I think that's really, really rewarding for us, rather than us just handing over money and saying, oh, well, do whatever you like. it becomes a real involvement for us. So, yeah, that's a really powerful project. We're really excited about it.
That's really becoming the way of animal conservation. Now, you can't just breed more animals and keep sticking them back out in the wild, can you? Because, as you said before, there's other socioeconomic reasons why these animals are being killed. It's not just we feel like it, so we'll kill an animal or two.
Oh, absolutely, and it's so complex. And do you know what? We see here in Australia, we have a really magnificent life. I don't think anyone could dispute that. And it's so easy for us to go, well, what are you doing over there? You know, they're beautiful animals. Just save your animals, save your wildlife. But, you know, in places like northern Kenya, which is quite close to Ethiopia, and Sudan and Somalia, you know, so much is going on, whether it's civil war or whether it's drought. They have an enormous sort of drought, I guess, wave coming through. They've missed two of their annual rain seasons. And there's so much pressure on these people, especially for grazing, that it's really hard to say to somebody, I'm sorry, take your goats over there because, you know what, there's some rhinos going to graze here and the rhinos are more important. That's not really how it works. And so it's a matter of sitting down with people and just talking. And they recognise how important the wildlife is because they know the grazing and the grass only grows this way because rhinos graze on it this time of year and zebras graze on it then, and then we bring our cattle in. And they've been doing that for thousands of years. They've been living with wildlife for, you know, thousands of years. So you're right. It's really important now to look at all the factors because they are so complex. Not about just going in and saving the animals. It's about providing alternative incomes. It's about, you know, really involving the people because it's their land and it's at the end of the day, it's their heritage. But it's about all working together towards common goals, which is, you know, reducing poverty and saving the wildlife. So, yeah, it's complicated and it's a very different sort of road for some zoos to go on, but it's exciting, hey? Because you can see that it's really working and you can see that everybody gets involved and everybody gets passionate about it and everybody moves kind of forward together. And it's a great project for us here at Werribee. We're really excited about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, Brooke, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me today. I'm going to let you go. I need you to go work on that saddle and settle up a rhino and I'll be down for a ride after 12 o'clock
all
today.
Right, I'll have a pink saddle and pink reins for you.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
All right, Adam.
Brooke, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Bye.
That's Brooke Squires, one of the keepers at the Werribee Zoo, telling us all about the rhinoceros there. If you'd like to find out more about what they're doing at all the three zoos in Victoria, just go to zoo.org.au. Very easy to remember indeed. You're on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Adam Barillet's All Naturalism.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.